Welcome to another edition of The Spiritual Revolution. My name is Phil Coppens.
My name is Kathleen McGowan.
And we are in post-election times.
Thank the Lord we are in post-election times. Because if I have to look at one more election advertisement between now and the next 4 years, I'm going to scream.
But first of all, we are today celebrating, or maybe not so much, the very interesting day. It is a total eclipse in Australia. We got something to see here in California, and for everybody else in the world, I think you were not so lucky, but you probably heard about it because it's a very special moment in time.
Well, first of all, we're actually taping this show. It's going to air in a few hours, but at the moment now of taping, we're kind of in the orb of the eclipse. The eclipse began here at 2:15 Pacific Standard Time, and it is a full solar eclipse, but this is a really tricky one, and I don't know how you have all been feeling this week, but there's a lot of Scorpio energy going on here. If you are a Scorpio, or if you have Scorpio rising, if you know your astrological chart, this is supposed to be an eclipse that has a very, very deep impact on your emotional state and your psychic state, but it's also supposed to be a time really to be able to, for all of us, not just the Scorpions in our midst, but for all of us to be sort of deeply meditating on what we need to shed. It's the time of shedding of the skin is really what this is about. It's about getting rid of, really truly getting rid of the old, and really truly allowing for the oncoming of the new. So it's a little bit of a New Year's Eve kind of feeling to it, which is a little bit similar to the whole Samhain experience that we've just come through with Halloween. But with this eclipse hitting us right now, and in terms of where it's hitting us astrologically, there's some very specific and very interesting and very challenging astrological configurations going on right now. I'm not going to go into them in too much detail. They have to do with fixed stars and a couple of other things that are going on. They're pretty specific astrologically in terms of the degrees and how they work. So I won't bore you with all that, but I will say that they're challenging. So if you're feeling uptight this week, if you're feeling frustrated, angry, ambivalent, a lot of people are saying that they feel great one minute and they feel wretched the next. I have been irritable as all hell this week. I've really wanted to just bite the heads off of everybody. And the good news is, this is one of the blessings of astrology and astronomy, is we can blame some of this on the stars. So if you've been particularly irritable, there is something in the air, literally, there is something in the sky that is causing a certain amount of pressure for all of us. We were at an event this weekend in Denver, and a lot of people were talking about how much pressure they've been feeling, that they've all felt, you know, that there's been this enormous amount of pressure on them. And I think everyone is feeling that. And I think all of that is pre-2012 stuff. We're going to talk about that in a little more depth. But I wanted to say something about this idea of pressure. You know, it's not fun and it doesn't feel good. And this whole concept of being irritated, angry, under pressure is not something that anybody likes. But there is a method to it. There is a reason for it. And we look at it and we see it in nature. You know, we're kind of in that period in the cocoon where the caterpillar is in the cocoon and all the imaginal cells are being, you know, mixed around so that that caterpillar can turn into something more interesting, more beautiful, and more well adapted to the new world that it's going to emerge from. And in order for that to happen, there has to be an enormous amount of pressure on this little creature. In fact, if the caterpillar does not experience enormous amounts of pressure as it tries to break itself out of the cocoon to turn into a butterfly, it will actually die. The pressure is necessary for the caterpillar to emerge into its new beautiful butterfly self. So, but those of us who are feeling this kind of pressure, I think it's a time to say, hey, we are in that cocoon stage and we're so, so, so close to emerging out of it into something far more beautiful, far more free, and newer and more exciting than we've ever been before. So there's a good thing happening here with the pressure. And of course, there's the old saying that before a diamond becomes a diamond, it's a lump of coal, until it experiences an enormous amount of pressure. And it is the enormous amount of pressure that turns a very ordinary lump of coal into something that is beautiful, brilliant, and priceless.
And I think human childbirth is very much about pressure as well, isn't it? They basically, apart obviously from cesarean sections, you apply physical pressure, and the stress on the child, as it is often said, of giving birth. So pressure is quite something which is common there with birth, whether it is physical or psychological. And definitely, Yes, we seem to be in this post-Obama one period, and leading up to December 21st, which is all about rebirth as well. And definitely over the last week, I have definitely felt in the radio interviews which I've been doing that there is the media definitely are interested in the December 2012 phenomenon now. There doesn't seem to be anything apart from Petraeus scandals and anything else which happens on a more like ad hoc basis. There doesn't seem to be anything on the media landscape which is coming in between elections and December 21st. So there's definitely interest, and there's definitely the usual gloom and doom about how is December 2012 going to be the end of the world and stuff like that. But, you know, as you were saying, December 21st is very much about the end of an old world and the birth of a new world. And today's shedding of the skin is definitely letting go of the past. And I think last week's election is the best illustration of two movements. One of them is basically the realization that there is a new world, that this is a one global village, multi-ethnic, multiracial, whatever you want to use. Nothing to do with borders, because in a one world there really isn't that much of borders. There is diversity, and diversity which should be celebrated, but it is all-encompassing. And then another world which is more focused on the borders. And I think those are two concepts which we see across the political landscape in every world, in every country, rather. But specifically what the Tea Party seem to try to do and fail miserably at is this self-realization that it is about time travel. They seem to be willing to go even further back in time. It's also something which I see about the Catholic Church. They are somehow realizing that they're losing adherence. And rather than analyze why that is happening, they kind of like pretend if we only get harsher and if we bring back the Inquisition and if we do all of these blatantly ridiculous things which are truly self-harm, like, you know, what Opus Dei is doing and all of those things, then if we go back to a time, basically, when we had it great, i.e. the Church, We just want to go there. So we're going to look at the values of that moment in the past, and we're going to recreate them, or at least try and recreate them, and that'll be all fine. And that seems to be what the Tea Party was trying to do as well. They were going to go back to a few centuries ago, when basically blacks were slaves, or not even slaves. They might still have been in Africa, to where basically people from south of the border were treated very much as colonial assets, and where women were non-political entities.
Where women were non-entities, period.
And all of a sudden there seems to be this gigantic, wow, why did none of these people vote for us? You know, like, or like this disbelief that actually these people vote, but then that they somehow don't vote for them. And I find it really weird, but at the same time very encouraging. The fact that there are openly gay, lesbian people now in Congress, that there is, you know, various ethnic diversity, that people specifically who ran on science fiction agendas to do with rape and childbirth really were ousted out.
Defeated, resoundingly defeated.
Very much is kind of like, you know, an underlying thing, I think, of what 2012 is all about, which is, you know, you can't move back in time. There are people, even if you want to, you can't. You know, it's simply impossible. And the reason why you lost is basically because even if you were to spend $50 billion more on campaigns, you know, it's simply impossible. You cannot do it because it's not real. You know, it requires a science fiction environment whereby we are no longer flying planes, whereby there is no such thing as the internet, and all of a sudden we would be having boats again, and there would be kind of like, you know, whatever. But this is not reality. Reality is we are one global village, and people want to live in that, people live in that, and people want to move forward in that. And that is what you see. What you saw was very encouraging. It's basically a nation who realizes you know, the reality of the things. And a person like me who lives in and has lived in various countries, I'm actually very happy that this has happened, because I have seen other countries sometimes sway to an irrational agenda, who are convinced that somehow, you know, these things can happen. And most of those countries are less racially diverse, so they can get away with those kind of things. But, you know, really what last week's elections showed to me was a nation who realized what reality was and voted for a real candidate. Some people might say that they are two shades of gray, that, you know, Mitt Romney and Obama, what's the difference? My reply would be that there is a radical difference because of the way the two ran. And that has really made all the difference. You know, America, despite what some of the people are thinking, you know, Obama is not a socialist. Please visit a socialist country in Europe and you will find what the difference is. France, for example, you know, you have no idea what the difference is between a socialist agenda and what Obama stands for. The two are almost mutually exclusive. So we have seen something here, I think, which is very underlying of what 2012 is all about. And to a large extent, I think, you know, on a, some kind of, and this is moral high ground, I don't really know what the correct terminology is, but kind of like the, it's very hard to bring it even into words, but like the feeling is that what 2012 should be about, of letting go of things which are of the past, which no longer matter because they are a for a reality which no longer exists. So let's not bask in them. Let's not try to bring them back, but let's deal with reality the way it is, and let's try and find out how to work forward from that. And that is very much, I think, the spirit of last week's elections.
Well, you know, going into the elections, I was really nervous. In fact, I was scared to death because there was so much right-wing fanaticism that was being thrown at us through, over the last couple of months. And there were, I would have these sort of panic attack periods of, oh my God, what if this is really the way that the country is turning? What if this really is not a fanatical minority? And what if this really is the majority in America? And whereas most of the time I refused to allow myself to believe that that could be possible, you know, you're so barraged by it. You're hearing, you know, we were hearing so many people, whether it was vice presidential Republican candidate Paul Ryan saying that there should not be any exceptions for abortion, even in the cases of incest and rape, because as far as he was concerned, rape was just another method of conception, which is a Neanderthal barbaric extreme point of view, whether it was Representative Todd Akin, another Tea Party Republican, saying things in about legitimate rape, talking about the difference between a legitimate rape versus, I don't know, an illegitimate rape. He was the infamous man who said that the female body has a way of shutting that whole thing down, and therefore women don't get pregnant during rape. Whether it was Murdoch, who said, you know, that God meant for babies to be born if they were conceived during rape. I mean, for me, being as an activist and as a woman, to be barraged by that kind of onslaught from the right that we got over and over again in these months before the election terrified me. I was really nervous about it. But what this election did is it restored my faith in America, and it restored my hope, but it also restored my faith and my belief in the fact that we are moving into a new world. This was the election of a new world. This was a progressive election. This was exciting because this is where progressive issues actually really came to the forefront. Every single one of those right-wing, conservative, fundamentalist fanatics who said that women should not have control over their bodies, they should not have control over if whether or not they can purchase birth control without consulting their boss. The things that these conservative men wanted to do or to take away from women's rights, every single one of them across the board was defeated. And I actually think that Todd Akin, Todd the legitimate rape man, the one who said that during a legitimate rape, the female body has a way of shutting that whole thing down, I truly think that he was the flashpoint in this election. Whether people realize this or not, you and I were talking about this. I truly think that you're right about this. When you said this to me a couple of days ago, Todd Akin could have lost this election for Mitt Romney, and people really maybe are not necessarily looking at that as closely as they should, because there was something about the way he said that that certainly went viral, and it should have. People needed to talk about it. I was one of those people that talked about it every time I could and put it all over my Facebook page and sent it out to the world. A lot of women did. And I think what happened is a lot of those people that were on the fence, who were not sure, who were undecided voters, I think that it was hearing things like that and saying, I don't want to be aligned with people who think like this, therefore I'm not sure that I can vote Republican. I really think that that's what happened to a lot of these undecided voters. They said, I may not be an Obama fan, but I know I don't want to be in the same category as people who think like this, as people who talk down to the 47% the way that Mitt Romney did, as men who think that it's okay to tell a woman that she has to give birth to her rapist baby because God means it that way.
Well, and I would like to add two things. One of them is that I think one of the absenteeism of Paul Ryan throughout the latter bits of the campaign were linked with this as well. They just feared he was going to be asked about this, and they were probably specifically MSNBC reporters primed by their bosses saying, you know, ask him this question, because it was going to get the same answer. He was going to say something similar. But I think it's also something, it's not, I mean, it is about this the Todd Aitkins, but there's also this, I think, larger canvas, which is that within the Republican Party, there is some kind of religious zealotry going on. You know, I don't know how they would like to dress themselves, but it would be very much like preachers and pointing. You know, Mick Huckabee, who's able to quote verse and chapter about something to do with this, and basically saying, we're doing this on Christian things. Again, America is more unique than across than various other countries in this world. America allows their presidential candidates to throw in the word God left, right, and center, whereas everybody else, specifically in kind of like countries like the UK, it basically makes you unelectable because people don't want to hear that. People, you know, in the case of Tony Blair, you know, he got massive support because he basically wasn't challenged on his Christian views. People don't want to hear that to some extent, what drives politicians. Here in America, that's definitely the other way around, and you're almost forced to say some of these things. And in the case of Obama, you know, it comes quite often across as this man doesn't really believe that. The point which I'm trying to make is that specifically within the Republican Party, there are these, they are more preachers than they are politicians. They really are biblical interpretists and reword that into political campaigns. And you kind of like know what you're going to get. And again, what you're going to get is centuries old and not really adapted to the current times.
Well, and they are entitled to their beliefs. They're just not entitled to inflict them upon the rest of us. And that is what America is all about. And they seem to have lost sight of that. They seem to have lost sight of the fact that this separation of church and state is a critical part of who and what we are as a nation. You know, but going back to these women's issues and where I think that they were really critical in this election, I remember the last couple of weeks of the election, there were a lot of there were a lot of commentary. There's a lot of commentary from the right wing about this, and they would kind of haul out their conservative women and their conservative female pundits and throw them out there, and they were all saying women are not one issue voters. You know, women don't women care as much about the economy, and they went after this. Well, women have to care about the economy, and women are now breadwinners, and they're going to vote for Mitt Romney because they care about the economy more than they care about these other issues. You know, and what I started to say in my little campaign. Was that, no, you know what? I am a one-issue voter. I am a woman, and I am a one-issue voter. But that one issue for me is sanity. Okay, this is not about the economy. This is about how do we go forward as a nation of sane human beings. And this is what I think a lot of people, whether they actually formulated it that way in their mind or just simply said, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to be a part of anyone who wants to shut down people's human rights, whether it's closing down their human rights as a woman, whether it's limiting them as an immigrant, whether it is limiting them for their sexuality. You know, this was the election where we had openly gay people elected for the first time. We had marriage equality voted in the places where people were trying to vote in marriage inequality. It was voted out. So this is where I say it was such an exciting wonderful victory for progress, for a real 21st century that is about humanity, that's about compassion, that's about equality, and that's about tolerance. And that, for me, is the ultimate catchphrase of what's happened here over these last couple of weeks going into this general election and coming out of it. Tolerance won. Hate lost and tolerance won, because what was really the victory here is the American people said, we need to live together and allow each other to have their differences, their rights, and their basic freedoms. And that is what America is all about.
And that's one thing which I think is, you know, like all of this, there seems to be also, and I think this is going to happen. You know, this battle is going to continue being dragged on until it is addressed. So I'm going to kind of like paint a framework, which is that we're seeing, you know, an atheist kind of stance on the one hand. And on the other side, we have this religious stance. And the religious stance is all about the fact that we are so, which I'm absolutely fine with. But there is a very big question, which is like, you know, how do soul and body interact? And the Christian perspective, the Christian dogmatic perspective, which has never been done with science, and this is the problem I'm going to highlight, is the assumption that it happens at creation. Basically, when, you know, two people meet, whether it is through rape or love, which is why we're in this situation whereby these Christian zealots, politicians adhere to this, and you know are on the same page as the Vatican, who spreads around you know anything to do with anti-abortion as much as they can. And then, of course, you know when you die, kind of like whatever it is, it doesn't really matter, because somehow whatever it is again kind of like sticks with you until the second coming of Jesus Christ. So there is this soul in there, but it is completely, you know, defined by Catholic dogma. And my problem with this is that science refuses to go there. Science is basically saying, we don't care, it's religion. And my point is, no, it is not. And some of the controversy, some of the, you know, crimes against women, crimes against children, which are being committed, are because science has taken a hands-off policy. Because science says everything to do with the soul, near-death experiences, all of that stuff, they basically either ridicule, and the other half say that it is none of their thing, that this is nothing you know, which science can address. And my belief is that this is complete BS. We can study these things, and science should study these things. And part of the reason why I think science isn't, you know, like, first of all, this is like the second step. If ever they were to engage, they would step back straight away because the indications from people who have either been hypnotized or have done these kind of studies is that the mind doesn't attach itself to the body at conception, that it happens far later. And that what we therefore have is something completely different from what these people are promoting. And that is something which I think is part of the problem. We are letting these people talk, and this debate is done because somehow science isn't engaged. And I feel that the longer this debate is going to be dragged out, the sadder it is. And pretty much science should be prodded a bit more. I've always said that it's going to be 10, 15 years before science is going to get a real bollocking for various things. But if sections of the Republican Party, if the Vatican continues to remain this dogmatic and is willing to spend so much effort and is going to promote so much of this agenda, then somehow it might not be 10 to 15 years before science is basically going to be engaged on this, because the atheists themselves on the other side of the debate, whenever this does enter a debate on a Bill Maher or on anything of the other things, they're ill-equipped. They can't cope with this either because they don't have anything there either. Because there is no science on the other side. It is completely like the absence of, and so what we're having is a non-debate. It's basically two stands who can debate this endlessly because there is no science on the topic.
Well, I think I need you to clarify what you mean by science here and what it is that you would ask science to do or where you would want science to be involved. Because you said a few minutes ago that one of the reasons that there are crimes against women and there are crimes against children is because science is not involved. So can you clarify where you're going with that? Because I'm a little bit confused on what you mean.
Well, basically, the soul. Is there a soul? The answer would be yes. When does the soul attach itself to the body? Those things are important to do with things like, on the one side, the debate currently is that basically one side says, religious fundamentalist says, that this happens at conception. And the atheist basically says that there is no such thing as a soul. And this is the problem of science, because this is an endless debate. This debate can be dragged on until eternity unless science engages and starts tackling these things and comes up with answers. And then the debate will not be done in a void, but will be done factually with facts. And a solution will be reached, and both sides of the fence will actually come to an understanding rather than this continuous and, again, endless debate, because it is basically two sides stating their position and it is completely void of any facts because science refuses to engage.
But do you think that science is ever going to tackle this idea of, is there a soul, and can they? I mean, can we scientifically prove that there is a soul? I mean, faith, is this a matter of faith? If this is a faith-based concept, does it require science?
It has nothing to do with faith. And I think this is, again, something where science has been great at pretending that it is a matter of faith. Things like the cross correspondences, these are basically, this was a group at the end of the 19th century of people who were absolutely convinced that there was life after death. They decided in life that they would do everything in their power, if they existed after death, to communicate with the living through a series of extremely complex manners. And it's basically too long. The book, if you want to read it, is called The Eager Dead. It's a brilliant book. It is one of the best books, and everybody should read them. It is about the cross correspondences and all the details. But basically, in the eyes of everybody who has looked into that, that is definitive proof that something survives after death. It meets the scientific criteria. All of these things. Again, the only reason why And you know, we can accept science. You know, we can accept that if we begin to delve into these things, we can learn as to things about the soul. There are these kind of things which science can address. It's simply the case that science refuses to even look at them. You know, the work of the name escapes me, the guy who's done all of the Ian Stevenson, all of the reincarnation work which he did in India specifically, the tests he did, you know, even the trickery things to make sure that there was not a single way this in the number of cases children could play pranks on him. You know, he has proven more than definitively that there is such a thing as reincarnation. There are doctors in ER facilities who do things like put quaint objects into corners whereby the patient can not physically see them, but the patients report when they have kind of basically cardiac arrests or things like that. They will come back afterwards and say, "Hey, doc, what's with the weird whatever puppet which is hiding on that corner of the room?" You know, doctors are experiencing this. Things like Ian Stevenson on reincarnation, various other things. You know, tremendous literature on the fact that hallucinogenics do something to the brain and that this isn't just a hallucination but actually a different kind of dimension, different kind of reality. All of those things, science with a big S, even though, you know, again, doctors are scientific and Ian Stevenson is a scientist. But as a whole, science basically says they are mavericks. They pretty much only live to make them look like mavericks or attack them. But science as a whole refuses to address these things. And as a result of that, yes, it is all a matter of fate, but only because science basically says that that is what it should be.
Well, I think all of that makes a lot of sense. And certainly I would love to see more exploration on the whole concept of the soul. I just wish that we'd stop fighting about it. You know, I think we've talked about this before. Atheism is another type of fundamentalism. And it's aggressive and it's just, atheists are so intent on proving their point, and they're so aggressive about it. And I actually have never met a truly happy atheist. I always say that I think that most atheists are people who are really, really frustrated because they've never had a mystical experience, or they've always wanted to have one, or they've been denied one. You know, I think that atheists come from some type of spiritual abuse, you know, in their lives. There's some kind of abuse or some kind of pattern or something that's happened to them early on to make them want to completely disconnect from the concept of spirituality. I'm not sure that there's any scientific study that's ever going to prove to the Christian fundamentalist the time of the soul connection to a human fetus. You know, does all this happen at conception? Does all this happen later? I mean, there are some interesting studies about this. I certainly believe that it does not happen at conception either, for all kinds of different reasons, which we won't go into now because this was really sort of not the direction that I want to continue to go into for the rest of the show about, you know, birth and right to life and all of that. But I think that there is a very interesting discussion to be had about at what point does science step in and care. And I'm not sure that there's a lot of progressive scientists out there who are ready to do that, unfortunately. So I think it does sort of remain in the realm of spirituality. And the bottom line is anything that is in the realm of spirituality really cannot and should not be legislated. So this is where we go back to religion and the separation between the sacred and the secular. You know, what I believe, what you believe, what 350 million people in America believe about the soul and about God really should not be the overriding factor in what we vote for in our politics.
And something else which I think had a big influence in the politics was this idea of conspiracy theories. And, you know, as somebody who might have been labeled on a number of occasions a conspiracy theorist, I find it interesting what is happening, because really the prima donna of the conspiracy theorists today, I think, is probably Donald Trump, who pretty much, you know, has created this notion of birther. Basically, this notion that there is a gigantic conspiracy about keeping the fact that Obama was not born in Hawaii under complete and utter control. It is somehow, and you know, truly this is the implication of what Trump is saying, that somehow, you know, Obama is so important that everybody in the government can keep under wraps that Obama is not an American. And this is like this massive, what I would call Illuminati conspiracy thing. It's taken from its books, because basically when you look into the Illuminati kind of material, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, like, and to a large extent, some of these things came back like, oh, do you think Obama is reincarnation of Akhenaten? Oh, do you think Obama is this? And it's kind of like, it's very much this notion that somehow, you know, that there is something there about Obama and, you know, about Romney to a large extent as well. But somehow that there is this grand conspiracy, and everybody is involved in it. And, you know, even Trump seems to have now become a victim, and I'm sure he will kind of like, you know, start to promote that once he's asked for his opinion as to what was happening. But it is these bad conspiracy theorists. Rachel Maddow, after the election, I believe on Wednesday, you know, highlighted a few others about the fact that the Republicans are absolutely convinced that FEMA is setting up concentration camps across America. Again, that is lifted from the incredibly bad conspiracy kind of thinking. And then she also mentioned that the Republicans don't seem to believe in the Apollo moon landing, which actually I had never come across the fact that this is somehow linked with the Republicans. And it would somehow beg bizarreness, because obviously if that were to have happened, it happened under Nixon. And Republicans normally tend to pretty much push all of these things into the Democrats. Obviously, what they tried to do was to say that there was a gigantic conspiracy involving Benghazi. And what you have is really bad conspiracy crap. It's really like, you know, the conspiracy fact. You know, are there conspiracies? Of course. But somehow the Republicans have kind of like read bad conspiracies for dummies or something like that. And I've only ever read chapter one. And they seem to have worked with that. And, you know, they've really given they've really given conspiracy theorists a really bad name, because the stuff they come up with is really bizarre. And to some extent, when I look at Fox News, I don't actually see, first of all, and this might be because I come as a foreigner into the thing, I don't actually see a Republican outlet, first of all. I mean, I see it. But the first thing I see is an airing for bad conspiracy things, that somehow bad conspiracies about global domination have kind of like, you know, made it mainstream, and that everybody who has everybody who's big enough and has these gigantic conspiracy theories, like Donald Trump, gets a hearing on this, and they make them up as well, and they always involve the Republicans. Sorry, they always involve the Democrats, as to, you know, how the Democrats are doing this and doing that. There's always some very grand conspiracy there, and it's really staggers belief. And to a large extent, and here's my conspiracy theory, to a large extent, it's like, you know, like they're making up bad conspiracy theories so that the real conspiracies somehow kind of like, you know, aren't addressed. And to a large extent, you know, the Rachel Maddows and the John Stewarts, I think, would actually, you know, shield some of that back, kind of going, oh, what is this? You know, can we go there because this might benefit the Republicans, because the Republicans have gone into these bad conspiracy things?
Well, that's what it's all about. I mean, it's all the Rupert Murdoch. Here's my conspiracy theory. My conspiracy theory is that Rupert Murdoch has a factory somewhere where he manufactures these blonde fembots who he programs to be annoying, shrill, and completely insane in terms of their right-wing fanatical agenda. I do not know where he gets these horrific women. And I'm surprised he hasn't given Ann Coulter her own show, because she's right up his alley, too. But there's some scary stuff that comes out of the faux news movement. But beyond that, I do want to say that, I mean, we all expect Fox News to be insane. I mean, I think that's what happens is I think that what's happening is that Fox News is ultimately making itself ridiculous. I mean, there was a time when people said, okay, well, you know what, MSNBC is a liberal news, Fox is a conservative news, you can kind of watch both and then, you know, figure it out for yourself. But what happened over these last few months with Fox News is it became progressively more ridiculous. And I think that the graduation from having any kind of integrity at all into being just an utter freak show happened on the night of the election. Anyone who watched any of the Fox coverage on the night of the election and watched these robots kind of self-destruct because they weren't programmed to deal with the information that was being given to them was actually quite fascinating. I think it's the only time I've ever actually enjoyed watching Fox in my life, was watching this happen. But going back to the whole concept of conspiracy theories, I just want to say for the record right now, I am so sick of the Illuminati crap and people throwing that at me, and I get it all the time. You get it even more because you come a little bit more from that world than I do, although that world is seeping into my world a lot. But for example, on the day of Obama's reelection, a lot of us were celebrating on my page. These are votes for progress. This is exciting. You know, ding dong, the witch is dead, all that other good stuff. And then you started getting it's the same. It doesn't matter if it's Obama, you know, it's Obama, Romney, it's all the same because it's all the Illuminati and this is what the Illuminati wanted. And of course, Barack Obama was elected and blah, blah, blah. I actually ended up booting a good number of people from my Facebook page on the day of the election, not because they were Republicans or conservatives, but because they had this weird Illuminati over the top David Icke conspiracy crap going on. And I hate to say this because I love my Canadians, but I have to tell you about five of the people I had to throw off my Facebook page on Election Day were Canadians who said, it doesn't matter, they're all the same, they're all wicked, you know, America is run by the Illuminati and is going to destroy the world. And, you know, to which I'm saying what all of those people are missing is that we're real human beings here who are voting on real issues, not just the presidential candidate. We were voting on things like reproductive rights. We were voting on things like, you know, we were voting on issues that are actually going to affect our children, our parents, you know, the elderly, the infirm, people who really need us to be their voice and be advocates for them by voting in the right people to protect their rights. So I have very, very, very little tolerance for all this Illuminati crap because I think it's invented. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's stupid. And I think this will probably cause people to call me part of the conspiracy because that's usually what happens. But I have noticed that it's getting, the whole concept of Illuminati conspiracy appears to be getting worse. Now, we had a show where we talked about this movie Thrive, but I blame some of these movies like Thrive, which are all about fear-mongering, making people afraid of this Illuminati conspiracy, that there are all these men lurking behind the scenes who are pulling the strings and none of us are ever going to escape it anyway, you know, so what's the point? But I have noticed recently that there are certain knee-jerk Illuminati reactions that are happening in social media. So, for example, a couple of weeks ago when you started shooting Ancient Aliens, and I posted on my Facebook that a picture of the Hollywood sign saying we're shooting Ancient Aliens today, and then all of a sudden I got this weird flurry of, oh, be careful, Hollywood is full of Illuminati, and now you're going to be part of the Illuminati conspiracy. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you people? No, we're going to shoot a TV show, and it has nothing to do with the Illuminati. And yes, you know what? We're talking about some really progressive things, and nobody bothers us when we do. And you can speak more to this than I can. But since you've been on Ancient Aliens and these subjects have been out more in the sort of mass media, you're finding that there's more of an Illuminati conspiracy fear, aren't you?
Well, I mean, first of all, the fear-mongering thing, you know, goes back to precisely that Republican thing. You know, the Tea Party I found in my mailbox today is very much about the fear-mongering, and it is very much about this Illuminati conspiracy. You know, I mean, slightly paraphrasing, they basically said, like, ooh, you know, there's 82 days or something until Obama is inaugurated. This intergovernmental thing. This is when Obama is going to do this, and you know, this is what we should all be fearful about. You patriots, you know, like, watch out for all of this thing. It's this fear mongering thing, which the Republican Party is using. It is this idea that Big Brother is real, and the real world doesn't work like that. You know, the real world doesn't exist like that. And to a large extent, the bad conspiracy things, you know, what has happened is this. We've gone from a world where anything to do with a conspiracy was not deemed to be acceptable. There were no conspiracies. Everybody was a lone gunman, or, you know, in Europe, nothing ever happened behind the scenes anywhere. Everything was open in the political landscape. And now we have gone to the other extreme, without any stop in the middle, that everything is futile. Whoever is elected... I mean, somebody on my Facebook page on Tuesday basically said, like, oh, you know, like, whoever is winning the election, this has been decided months ago. And I the way she worded that was that she knew. So I actually said, like, well, who is it? You know, like, and I kind of thought, like, she still has 5 hours to answer this before it became, like, 9 o'clock here on the West Coast and midnight on the East Coast. And she never did, because she knew if she was going to say something, you know, there was a 50% chance of being wrong, even though pretty much everybody agreed it was going to be Obama on the day of the election who was going to win. Anyway, there is this bad... There is this bad Illuminati thing going around, and I think it's got to do to some extent. It's a global issue. To some extent, it is that people have lost faith in politicians. You know, the masks have dropped, and I think Obama is actually a very human example of this, and people don't believe that he's human, and I think to some extent that's the problem here. Politicians don't know what goes on. Specifically, when, you know, the crisis happened in 2008, they relied on AIDS. You know, I mean, you can see this. You know, how did we get to 2008? And you see a trend whereby Reagan appointed somebody. He abused the system. Clinton had no idea what was happening. He used the same person. And Bush has no idea. So the same clique is in control. And as a politician, they unless you have a background in economics, and very few politicians in the U.S. seem to do, you really kind of, like, you know, have no idea what's going on. And so you rely basically on people to literally get you into trouble. And the people who understand the problem are the ones who quite by and large have created that problem. But, I mean, coming back to Obama, what we have in Obama is a guy who is very much human. You know, who messes up, who sometimes has no clue what's happening or what is the best kind of situation forward, and who you sometimes see live on television struggle with that humanity. And, you know, he does the best with what he's given. And he, you know, sometimes sometimes it's great. Sometimes it comes a bit short, but it's this human thing. And I think this is partly where the conspiracy thing comes in. Because people do not want to believe that the president is human. You know, you want to believe that the leader of a nation is all powerful. And if he's not all powerful, then there's somebody behind who's all powerful. But please let there be somebody who steers us in a direction. And in the case of the Tea Party, what they're saying is Obama is all evil, and we need to fight him. So you have this notion still, that even though we all know that politicians, you know, have shortcomings. And in the case of Petraeus, he is part politician. But somehow there has to be more to it than that. And we see this in, again, going to Fox. You know, Petraeus basically fell in love with a woman, couldn't resist the temptation. He showered her. He realized, I think, that she was, an intellectual, kind of like, who he could speak about these things. He lets her into this world. And he doesn't seem to realize that by doing that, he's breaking certain very important rules, because she is not privy to go into secret Afghanistan meetings. And as a result of that, he should probably have been fired, or if he stepped down on his own, But it is being made into a conspiracy once again, the timing. Did Obama do this? Did he wait until, 5 or 6 o'clock or whatever it was on the Tuesday of the election? Well, even if he did, that's probably the extent of it. He knew he had a problem. He knew that a member, of his government was caught and something had to have happened. But then it spirals into so much more. It's linked with Benghazi. And if they could go further, and that's kind of like what you happen. Like, the David Icke's and everybody else will say that this is part of a larger thing. There's always this larger thing. And that's basically, giving way too much credit to the people involved. What I have seen, and this is best addressed, I think, when it comes to things like UFOs, people in government, whether it is Bill Clinton or Podesta, they have no clue. If the American government knows about UFOs, to quote Bill Clinton, they failed to tell him. And that is pretty much it. To somehow pretend the notion that there is this massive conspiracy, that Obama is so important that the entire government could somehow work together in trying to make sure that Donald Trump and his high-powered investigators, don't get a birth certificate of a man, it's kind of like, okay, that's unbelievable. It doesn't work like that. This is not a credible conspiracy. But what the conspiracy feeds is fear. It's fear that Obama is all powerful, that he can do all of these things. The Tea Party, again, is at it. That what is going to happen now is we need to be living in fear. And so even though they have been dealt a massive blow, it is brought down once again to you should live in fear. And this is, it's like if there are two forces in the universe, fear realizes it lost. Because, the Tea Party, basically got told that we don't fear blacks, we don't fear immigration, and we don't fear women. And all of a sudden, pretty much what we are seeing once again through these outlets is that they're not going to let it go. They want to continue trying to spread fear. Now, it's not going to work, but they will continue trying to do that. And this fear-mongering, it's going to continue. And that's, I think, like what we see the expressions on our Facebook pages, that the people basically go like, oh, well, but okay, you're happy about this election, but you really should fear it.
Well, you know what? The whole thing, too, about this fear concept is that it's disempowering, right? If you are afraid, then, and if you are told over and over again that you don't have any power, then you don't. And why do we want to feed into that? Why do we possibly want to feed into this concept that we don't have any power? That is something that I'm definitely going to fight as long as there is breath in my body. We do have a lot of power, and we do make an impact, and we do make a difference, and even one person makes a difference. And I refuse to believe that there is a global conspiracy from the beginning of time to keep that from happening. Do we have opposing forces in our lives? Yes, of course we do. And sometimes we have opposing forces on a big scale, and sometimes we have them on a small scale. But I refuse to believe that there is some kind of a global conspiracy to disempower people. I think that what people have to be aware of is that there are people who are making an awful lot of money and getting an awful lot of attention and selling their books and all of these things by claiming that there is a global conspiracy. So let's get rid of the disempowerment and go into the empowerment and say, you know what, that the future is in our hands. And sometimes it's just about how we address these issues, how we think about them, how we move forward in our own lives, how much energy we give to this stuff. And that goes back to what's happening in the world right now. Here we are in this, you know, sort of extraordinary day of the eclipse. We were looking at all these sort of different astrological websites, you know, to see what different astrologers were saying. And it really ran the gamut of super doom and gloom. Oh, you know, it's a day for accidents and horrible things are going to happen and everyone should just stay home. And I mean, some of them were truly distressing to, you know, the real spiritually inclined astrologers who were saying, look, you know, if we all sit around and talk about how bad this is going to be, we're going to make it worse. So instead, let's look at, you know, the positive things that can come from this. And this is where the whole concept of the snake shedding its skin comes in, right? Let's look at getting rid of all of these things from the past, shedding the stuff that no longer serves us so that we can move forward. You know, it's the phoenix issue, right? So it's the phoenix has to rise from the ashes. In order for that to happen, there have to be ashes, which means that something has to die, something has to be burned to the ground, figuratively, not literally. It's like the tower card in the tarot deck, right? It looks disastrous. It's considered a very difficult card because it tears everything down at its foundations. But you know what? Sometimes things have to be torn down at their foundation so that we can rebuild them, make them stronger, make them more beautiful, make them something that is going to move us forward into the future in a really positive way. So let's look at the empowerment. Let's celebrate this moving forward. Let's celebrate the amazing progress and the hope that has come from this extraordinary election that has just proven that the American people are really all about tolerance and humanity.
Absolutely, and I think that is the theme moving forward. You know, this is the truth. The truth is we have this one world, and we need to be tolerant. We need to not live in fear. We need to embrace the fact that we are one mankind, and everything else, you know, is secondary. Everything else is, to a large extent, an illusion. There is one world, and we are all part of it, and that is largely the message of December 21st, 2012, you know, the fact that this is the world we live in. Get to terms with it. This is reality. This is the way of us moving forward. So with that, however, we have come to a stop because another hour of the spiritual evolution is done. But we are actually very few weeks away from December 21st. In fact, it's kind of scary to realize that it's about 5 weeks or so away.
Scary in a good way.
Yes, scary in a good way. It'll be kind of like interesting to see, like, you know, like as you said at the top of the show, like we no longer have to see adverts for elections. And 5 weeks from now, there will be no more questions about December 21st, 2012 and what's going to happen. So it's a new world, just all by those two things together. But anyway, we have come to another episode of The Spirit Revolution. If you want to listen to this one or any of our other ones, you can do so in a number of ways. bbsradio.com, you can download every single one of our Spirit Revolutions. By the way, it is about 110 shows which we've done. You can do that for a small fee, but you get so much more than just us. If you don't want to spend money, you can pretty much listen to about 50, if not more, of our shows via iTunes. iTunes, just search for The Spirit Revolution, and you will get a brief synopsis of what they were about, and then you can download them. If you are only interested in what we've been doing for about the past 6 months, then head to our website, thespiritrevolution.com, where you will find out everything which we have been doing, listen what we have been doing, but also get information of some of our guests from before that period in time. But whatever you do, tune back in again next week when we will be doing another one. But in the meantime, from the both of us,
the truth against the world.